Chapter 10, in which Calcifer promises Sophie a hint. Hal must have come back while Sophie and Michael were out. He came out of the bathroom while Sophie was frying breakfast on Calcifer and sat gracefully in the chair, groomed and glowing and smelling of honeysuckle.
"Dear Sophie," he said, "always busy. You were hard at work yesterday, weren't you, in spite of my advice? Why have you made a jigsaw puzzle of my best suit? Just a friendly inquiry, you know."
"You jellied it the other day," said Sophie. "I'm making it over."
"I can do that," said Howl. "I thought I showed you. I can also make you a pair of 7-league boots of your own, if you give me your size. Something practical in brown calf, perhaps. It's amazing the way one can take a step 10.5 miles long and still always land in a cowpat."
"It may have been a bullpat," said Sophie. "I dare say you found mud from the marshes on them, too. A person my age needs a lot of exercise."
"You were even busier than I realized then," said Hal, "because when I happened to tear my eyes from Letty's lovely face for an instant yesterday, I could have sworn I saw your long nose poking round the corner of the house."
"Mrs. Fairfax is a family friend," said Sophie. "How was I to know you would be there, too?"
"You have an instinct, Sophie, that's how," said Howell. "Nothing is safe from you. If I were to court a girl who lived on an iceberg in the middle of an ocean, sooner or later, probably sooner, I'd look up to see you swooping overhead on a broomstick. In fact, by now I'd be disappointed in you if I didn't see you."
"Are you off to the iceberg today?" Sophie retorted. "From the look on Letty's face yesterday, there's nothing that need keep you there."
"You wrong me, Sophie," Hal said.
He sounded deeply injured. Sophie looked suspiciously sideways. Beyond the red jewels swinging in Hal's ear, his profile looked sad and noble.
"Long years will pass before I leave Letty," he said. "And in fact, I'm off to see the king again today. Satisfied, Mrs. Nose?"
Sophie was not sure she believed a word of this,
though it was certainly to Kingsbury with the doorknob red down that Hal departed after breakfast, waving Michael aside when Michael tried to consult him about the perplexing spell. Michael, since he had nothing left to do, left too. He said he might as well go to Cesare's. Sophie was left alone. She still did not truly believe what Howell had said about Letty, but she'd been wrong about him before, and she had only Michael and Calcifer's word for Howell's behaviour after all. She collected up all the little blue triangles of cloth and began guiltily sewing them back into the silver fishing net, which was all that was left of the suit. When someone knocked at the door, she started violently, thinking it was the Scarecrow again.
"Port Haven door,"
Calcifer said, flickering a purple grin at her. "That should be all right, then." Sophie hobbled over and opened it, blue down. There was a cart horse outside. The young fellow of 50, who was leading it, wondered if Mrs. Witch had something which might stop it casting shoes all the time.
"I'll see," said Sophie. She hobbled over to the grate. "What shall I do?" she whispered. "Yellow powder, 4th jar, along on the 2nd shelf, Calcifer whispered back. "Those spells are mostly belief. Don't look uncertain when you give it to him."
So Sophie poured yellow powder into a square of paper, as she'd seen Michael do, twisted it smartly, and hobbled to the door with it.
"There you are, my boy," she said. "That'll stick the shoes on harder than any 100 nails. Do you hear me, horse? You won't need a smith for the next year. That'll be a penny. Thank you."
It was quite a busy day. Sophie had to put down her sewing and sell, with Calcifer's help, a spell to unblock drains, another to fetch goats, and something to make good beer. The only one that gave her any trouble was the customer who pounded on the door in Kingsbury. Sophie opened it red down to find a richly dressed boy, not much older than Michael, white-faced and sweating, wringing his hands on the doorstep.
"Madam Sorceress, for pity's sake," he said, "I have to fight a duel at dawn tomorrow. Give me something to make sure I win. I'll pay any sum you ask.
Sophie looked over her shoulder at Calcifer, and Calcifer made faces back, meaning that there was no such thing ready-made.
That wouldn't be right at all, Sophie told the boy severely. Besides, dueling is wrong.
Then just give me something that lets me have a fair chance, the lad said desperately. Sophie looked at him. He was very undersized and clearly in a great state of fear. He had that hopeless look a person has who always loses at everything.
I'll see what I can do, Sophie said. She hobbled over to the shelves and scanned the jars. The red one, labelled Cayenne, looked the most likely.
Sophie poured a generous heap of it on a square of paper. She stood the human skull beside it.
"Because you must know more about this than I do," she muttered at it.
The young man was leaning anxiously round the door to watch. Sophie took up a knife and made what she hoped would look like mystic passes over the heap of pepper.
"You are to make it a fair fight," she mumbled. "A fair fight. Understand?"
She screwed the paper up and hobbled to the door with it.
"Throw this in the air when the duel starts," she told the undersized young man. "And it will give you the same chance as the other man. After that, whether you win or not depends on you."
The undersized young man was so grateful that he tried to give her a gold piece. Sophie refused to take it, so he gave her a twopenny bit instead, and went away whistling happily.
"I feel a fraud," Sophie said as she stowed the money under the hearthstone, "but I would like to be there at that fight."
"So would I," cackled Calcifer. "When are you going to release me so that I can go and see things like that?"
"When I've got even a hint about this contract," Sophie said.
"You may get one later today," said Calcifer.
Michael breezed in toward the end of the afternoon. He took an anxious look round to make sure Howl had not come home first, and went to the bench, where he got things out to make it look as if he'd been busy, singing cheerfully while he did.
"I envy you being able to walk all that way so easily," Sophie said, sewing a blue triangle to silver braid. "How was my niece?"
Michael gladly left the workbench and sat on the stool by the hearth to tell her all about his day. Then he asked about Sophie's. The result was that when Howell shouldered the door open with his arms full of parcels, Michael was not even looking busy. He was rolling around on the stool, laughing at the duel spell. Howell backed into the door to shut it and leaned there in a tragic attitude.
"Look at you all," he said. "Ruin stares me in the face. I slave all day for you all, and not one of you, even Calcifer, can spare time to say hello."
Michael sprang up guiltily, and Calcifer said,
"I never do say hello."
"Is something wrong?" asked Sophie.
"That's better," said Hal. "Some of you are pretending to notice me at last. How kind of you to ask, Sophie. Yes, something is wrong. The king has asked me officially to find his brother for him, with a strong hint that destroying the Witch of the Waste would come in handy too, and you all sit there and laugh."
By now it was clear that Howl was in a mood to produce green slime any second. Sophie hurriedly put her sewing away.
"I'll make some hot buttered toast," she said. "Is that all you can do in the face of tragedy?" Howl asked. "Make toast. No, don't get up. I've trudged here laden with stuff for you, so the least you can do is to show polite interest." "Here."
He tipped a shower of parcels into Sophie's lap and handed another to Michael. Mystified, Sophie unwrapped things. Several pairs of silk stockings, two parcels of the finest cambric petticoats with flounces, lace and satin insets, a pair of elastic-sided boots in dove-grey suede, a lace shawl, and a dress of grey watered silk trimmed with lace that matched the shawl.
Sophie took one professional look at each and gasped. The lace alone was worth a fortune. She stroked the silk of the dress, awed.
Michael unwrapped a handsome new velvet suit.
"You must have spent every bit that was in the silk purse," he said ungratefully. "I don't need this. You're the one who needs a new suit."
Howl hooked his boot into what remained of the blue and silver suit and held it up ruefully. Sophie had been working hard, but it was still more hole than suit.
"How selfless I am," he said. "But I can't send you and Sophie to blacken my name to the king in rags. The king would think I didn't look after my old mother properly. Well, Sophie, are the boots the right size?"
Sophie looked up from her awed stroking.
"Are you being kind," she said, "or cowardly? Thank you very much, and no, I won't."
"What ingratitude!" Howl exclaimed, spreading out both arms. "Let's have green slime again, after which I shall be forced to move the castle 1,000 miles away and never see my lovely Letty again."
Michael looked at Sophie imploringly. Sophie glowered. She saw well enough that the happiness of both her sisters depended on her agreeing to see the king, with green slime in reserve.
"You haven't asked me to do anything yet," she said. "You just said I'm going to."
Howl smiled. "And you are going to, aren't you?"
"All right. When do you want me to go?" Sophie said.
"Tomorrow afternoon," said Howl. "Michael can go as your footman. The king's expecting you."
He sat on the stool and began explaining very clearly and soberly just what Sophie was to say. There was no trace of the green slime mood. Now things were going Howl's way, Sophie noticed. She wanted to slap him.
"I want you to do a very delicate job," Howl explained, "so that the king will go on giving me work like the transport spells, but not trust me with anything like finding his brother. You must tell him how I've angered the Witch of the Waste, and explain what a good son I am to you. But I want you to do it in such a way that he'll understand I'm really quite useless."
Howl explained in great detail. Sophie clasped her hands round the parcels and tried to take it all in, though she could not help thinking, if I was the king, I wouldn't understand a word of what the old woman was driving at.